didn't top their group, Croatia, thanks to Luka Modric and co. Also make it through the round of 16, as well as the Czech Republic. It's bye-bye to Scotland. Plus, we look ahead to Wednesday as a final day of the group stage. France against Portugal, Germany against Hungary. Are Spain going to get out of their group? So much to talk about. We have Jane's Bench here. Que Golazo begins right now. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Que Golazo on this Tuesday Euro 2020 action. And with me, James Benj. James Benj, how are you, my friend?
I'm very good, thanks. It was quite a fun, enjoyably quiet day today. I actually enjoyed not having that many games more than I thought I would.
Yeah, no, it's pretty good, right? We more things to do, errands and, you know, annoy politicians and stuff. Yep. No, absolutely. Well, James Benj, welcome to the show. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Que Golazo. Let's discuss, first of all, Euro 2020 Tuesday's action, and we'll have some Wednesday action as well because it's a big one. But we begin with Tuesday. Group D, England, end as winners of Group D with a 1-0 win over the Czech Republic, and Croatia took care of business against Scotland. A Luka Modric absolute beauty. 3-1 there, meaning that England already made it to the round of 16 before the game, as well as the Czech Republic, but it was just about seeding. So England topped the group. Croatia actually end second, and Czech Republic in the third place, one of the top third place spots. James Benj, your reaction straight away from the England game.
It wasn't vintage, but actually, I think compared maybe to the Scotland game, I thought there were real signs of encouragement. I know you're going to want to talk about one of the players, so I'm just going to not mention him, and I'll let you.
We could talk about the other player. He was great.
We certainly could. I thought Bukayo Saka really seized his opportunity, and I think it's fair to say, you know, there were a lot of doubters, myself included, and look, you know, I bow to no one in my admiration of Saka, but getting the start over Jadon Sancho and Marcus Rashford was a real show of faith, and I think this was a reminder. I mean, you know, whatever Sancho, Rashford, or even Foden, who was only really rested because he was on a yellow, whatever they could have done doesn't take anything away from what Saka did. This was a performance of real composure, exceptional decision-making. I think the one thing that stood out at Arsenal and stands out tonight is that when you give Saka the ball, he makes the right decision, but it's not, you know, he's not doing that in a conservative way. And that was typified with the goal, picking the ball up, driving straight at Thomas Suchek and beating him, running smartly, nice interplay with Phillips, and then the ball comes eventually to Jack Grealish, who puts it on a sixpence right in the right area. Sterling scores. It was that side of it was really good. I think there's still cause for growing concern, I would say, around Harry Kane. He was kind of a bit more willing to place himself around the box, and the Czechs.
His best game, you think, James? His best game of the year tournament for sure, though, right?
Yeah, but I mean,
not saying
very, you know, yeah, that's not saying a huge amount, but yeah, I think. One of the things I really like that we should maybe point out, specifically with having Grealish in the team at the 10, real willingness from him to drift into that left area that we know he plays in at Villa. And actually, I mean, I say he was at the 10, but it was kind of hard to know whether it was him or Sterling.
Oh, weird.
Yeah. Played so nicely. And Sterling was moving on to be the striker. And then, you know, if Kane did drop deep, which he did a bit less frequently, that meant you always had that central attacking presence right in the penalty area. So good stuff. And you've got Phil Foden and maybe Mason Mount. Well, probably not Mount and Chilwell, but you've got players to come back in. So it was all right.
Yeah, I think good first 45 minutes, a little dreary in the second. It was a typical like Southgate thing to do to just protect the 1-0. What'd you say?
I said it felt like a friendly.
Yeah, it did. It did. It really did. I mean, Czech Republic knew they were through it anyway, and England as well. So maybe the mentality there was there that nobody was really... I think the major objective was not to get anybody hurt. Maybe, I don't know, but it was definitely a different 45. Bukayo Saka, my man of the match. He was ridiculous. 19 years old, decision-making fantastic. It was his initial run entering the final third that created everything for the Grealish assist and then Raheem Sterling to put it at the back of the net. I thought it was great. Harry Maguire showed why he's important, right? Yeah. Harry Juan Roman Riquelme Maguire, that ball early on. Woo, that was a beauty, huh?
I think he defended as well as Mings, which is encouraging because Mings has played really well. But that ball, that eye for a pass, we all kind of enjoy seeing Maguire struggle because he's an £80 million defender who is not his best defending. But this guy has got a real eye for a pass. Yeah. Only other thing, I'm just looking at the scenarios here, and it did seem like the Czechs were kind of quite willing to settle for third place. One thing to note is they will probably, if I'm looking at this right, the most likely scenario for them is they end up playing the Dutch. I think they might have thought to themselves, look, if we finish third, we could beat the Netherlands. So it's one thing to keep an eye out for because, second place in this group could get you Spain. First place could get you Germany. So maybe the Czech Republic are going to come out of this happier than anyone.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. It's such a tricky thing on who makes it to the round of 16. But I think, honestly, especially with England, it doesn't matter. The most important thing is get victories, build the confidence, because, England could beat anybody maybe on their day and could lose to anybody on their day. So it really doesn't specifically matter. I thought that Jadon Sancho should have probably gone some more minutes, perhaps ahead of Jude Bellingham when he came on to replace Jack Grealish. I know you're going to hear me say this. I mean, I'm fine if you take him off, but on the 68th minute, James Bench, come on.
Well, but then you've got, I thought Grealish was excellent. So you have to preserve him for tougher tasks ahead.
Fair point.
I want to see Sancho. But then, I've been banging the drum since before the tournament. I think foolishly I predicted he might be one of the stars of this tournament and we haven't even seen him play yet. But on Sancho, it's not the end of the world, is it? It kind of reminds you of how, Eric Cantona was hardly ever playing for France, but it was like, we've got Ginola, Zidane, Henri, everyone.
Yeah, he also pissed off France as well. Jadon Sancho has been nothing but nice.
I wouldn't want people to think this. But, it's that, I couldn't think of another example, but it's just that glut of riches,
Yeah, and Gareth Southgate has justification. Look, we won. And we haven't lost. We haven't conceded a goal. Like, what do you want from us? So there is that argument, right? The five results from England, the last five. 1-0, 1-0, 1-0, 0-0, 1-0.
Grit and grind this. That is how you win tournament football. I think they still remain, for me, in the upper echelon of contenders for this competition because they aren't making stupid errors in defence. They don't look like they can be got at on that side. And you would still trust them to score once. And I think if they'd needed more against the Czech Republic, they would probably have gone and got them.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Well, England get the job done atop the group and they will play next week on Tuesday. And they'll face the runner-up of Group F, the group of death. And we'll find that out in this episode, a little bit of a preview as they play on Wednesday, the final day of the group stage. Scotland, so long. Farewell. Auf Wiedersehen. Adieu. Sorry. Thank you for showing up. It was tough. It was always going to be tough. Luka Modric, James Bench, that goal was ridiculous.
I'm drooling just thinking about it. I mean, yes, if you're a Scottish fan, you may have witnessed your side eliminated from maybe the only tournament you'll see them in your lifetime. Certainly the only tournament that they'll partly host. But hey, at least you got to see the two best goals of the tournament. So, every really depressing cloud has the faintest silver lining. Modric was phenomenal. Every time I sort of, obviously flicking between the two games, every time you look down, was Modric on the ball. Yeah. I think maybe Scotland just didn't have the dynamism and the energy in midfield to keep up with him. I think you could tell they put quite a lot into that England game. And, they missed their own Modric in Billy Gilmore. I think that was a real loss that lets Croatia just have these long spells of possession that Scotland couldn't match when they were on the ball.
And this could be the spark that Croatia needed, just to build them confidence. And as you mentioned, they'll be facing, they're not facing a Group F opponent. I know we keep going on about Group F, but there is a difference, I think, between facing a France and a Poland. And, that will be important for Croatia moving forward, do you think?
It might be Spain, which I just think...
Which at this moment, I'm not that... Okay.
Good God, it would be a boring game of football, wouldn't
it? Yeah, geez, God. Absolutely.
I know we're all supposed to sort of step back on occasions and really admire their ability to keep possession. But if Croatia play Spain, it would be so passive. And
yeah. James, yeah. It's like if you go to like a gallery, an art gallery, and you see like an artist do paints and stuff. Okay, wow, for like 10 seconds. And then it's really boring. Like you want something to, it's beautiful to watch what they're doing. But you
really
need...
want to watch Fast and the Furious 9.
Yeah, exactly. All of them in one go. Absolutely. But anyway, that's the result. But we're going to talk about Spain's group in a second. Czech Republic, can they do things here? I mean, you mentioned that they're probably the happier. Maybe. What do you think?
Yeah, they're. I think they're just going to be a really tough out. Having said that, you know, the defense and the press reminded me a lot of Sparta Prague's, where there are occasions where it really hits you with intensity. But if you can, you know, carry on, hold out through them, and it will, you know, they'll probably be facing probably, it's either Sweden or the Netherlands. I feel like the Netherlands are the sort of team that can just hold the
ball. They're perfect for that press.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're perfect for that press. Memphis Depay will eat that up all day. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. Having said that, you know, they look like a team that could test England from set pieces, and England are a good set piece attack and defense. So that will be their way through. You know, everyone here on Kegelassa, we've still got our doubts about the Dutch, no matter how much they might be making us look foolish. We're going to have to stick to this until they
are
licking Henri Delorme.
And then when they lose in the final in extra time,
right all along.
We told you so. Absolutely. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to preview Wednesday because it's big. It is very big. All right, so stay right here. Kegelassa, James Bench here with us. We'll be right back.
Baseball has begun, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sample, every Monday through Saturday as we deliver all of your fantasy baseball needs in just 5 minutes. We'll break down the biggest performers, news, and prospects who could make an impact this season. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, everybody, to Kegelassa. James Bench here with me. We are now talking the last day of the group stages in Euro 2020, and we got some good games. We got a big. Let's begin with Group F. James Bench: Germany against Hungary and Portugal against France. 3 p.m. Eastern, simultaneous matches, of course. Oh man, Portugal, France. What do you got for me? What do you think?
I'm super intrigued by this one. It feels like, you know, a game that could be really difficult for France. We've seen them against, you know, against Germany when there was a little bit more openness, when Germany were willing to keep the ball and build possession. That suited France to a T. And I mean, I know they only had one shot on target, but there were so many counterattacks that nearly burst into life. But give them a team like Hungary, and frankly, give them a team like Portugal, where these teams are just going to say, break us down, show us what you've got. That will suit them to a T.
Yeah.
Equally, you know, we saw this chasm in the Portuguese side that it wasn't just that no one dealt with it. Or it wasn't just that it was, you know, it was there. It was that no one was dealing with it at all across the team. You know, that Nelson Semedo spot in the Germany game, it wasn't just Semedo's a bad defender. It was that people around him seemed to know he was a bad defender, and no one did anything to exploit that. I'd be interested to see whether France maybe go a bit more attacking at left back, bring in someone like Lucas Digne to support Mbappe, and say, let's really test this weak spot in the Portuguese team. You know, is Bernardo Silva going to track back? Are the defensive midfielders actually going to shuttle out wide rather than just packing the middle and leaving the flanks open? That to me seems like a really an area that Portugal have to fix. Otherwise, you know, it's not just that they could lose, but they only need to lose this 2-0 for things to get a little bit dicey, I believe. I mean, you know, they've got a lot of goals scored in the bank, so it's complicated. I think actually they do probably need to lose, now I say that, by a 3-goal margin.
Yeah.
Am I wrong? Because they've scored more goals than Ukraine. And Ukraine, obviously Finland are pretty much out of this. So, I mean, Portugal can probably get away with a bit of a paddling, but that's not exactly a great way to build towards the to build towards the knockout rounds, is it?
Yeah,
that's kind of what I think will happen.
Yeah, yeah. This is a game. This game, James, I think is going to show who both teams really are. Like, what are they about? Like, are they France? To me, remain obviously a favorite, but you know, that draw against Hungary really showed something there. I don't know if they were overwhelmed by the support of Budapest. Maybe that had something to do with it. They're playing once again in that stadium against Portugal. But then again, it's France, like the World Cup champions. Like, would you really be? And then Portugal, you know, Germany obviously came in with a purpose and they were also at home. But I wonder what, you know, Portugal side and Cristiano Ronaldo and co thought of their own performance. I mean, Germany were very good, but I'm thinking there's a few things here. First of all, like, how do you solve the Cristiano Ronaldo problem if you're a France perspective? Because he's clearly on a mission now in this one.
He was how to criticize a person that, you know, scores as goals, is the record scorer at this competition. But I do feel like there are occasions where he just kind of goes missing until that last act, and that last act is the most important thing in football. Mm. And, you know, you can't criticize a man for just scoring goals. Having said that, you know, how will he test? Who are we talking here? My mind has gone completely. But how will he test the French centre backs whose names?
Yeah, Varane, Kimpembe. Yeah,
Varane and Kimpembe. You know, they've got a lot of the attributes to deal with a player like Ronaldo. I think a lot of it, you know, get the service to him, and we know he'll take those chances. But
he's never scored against France, James Bench.
Yeah, and I think part of that, you know, it was almost the same against Germany. I know he did get a goal, but he just didn't really contribute much else. And I think, you know, you do sometimes need a whole 11 to beat these teams. And is getting Ronaldo in this team getting the best out of players around him? Bruno Fernandes has been kind of pretty much a non-entity at this tournament so far. I would be tempted to drop him or to drop one of the holding midfielders. I mean, probably because it's France, to drop Fernandes and get someone like Renato Sanchez in, because there is a front four and there is a back six in this, or a back seven in this Portugal team. And that suits no one right now.
Yeah.
If there's that link, then clearly you're going to get more from Ronaldo, because you're going to kind of, everything's going to be a bit more fluid and involved. I predicted Portugal would win. I was really high on them at this tournament, but both performances have been really underwhelming. You know, a 3-0 win looks great on paper, but you couldn't really have complained if you were Portugal, if Hungary had drawn that game, because they held you out for 84 minutes. And then it was a deflected cross and a deflected goal. There's a lot more for Portugal to prove from my perspective. I think with France, this specific team has the benefit of the doubt that they've won the World Cup. And we all say Portugal are the holders, but it wasn't this. A lot of it was not this Portugal team.
Yeah.
You know, there are a holdovers, but it's a really different team aside from Ronaldo. So I need to see a lot more from them.
Yeah. Renato Sanchez needs to start for me. He's very important for Portugal, I think, to the point that you mentioned. By the way, the last four matches between Portugal and France have only produced 3 goals, 2 for France, 1 for Portugal. So I don't expect a goal fest here. To your point about France not needing anything to prove, I think that they're just going to make sure that they're, you know, they're injured. Well, Ousmane Dembélé, of course, is a problem, but, you know, the depth of their squad, and I think they're going to come into this one just trying to be smart. Portugal, I think, won't have a point to prove because of what happened in the previous game. France are unbeaten in each of their last 11 group stage games at major international tournaments. Portugal have won only one of their last 13 games against France. So, you know, give me a score prediction. What do you think?
There's one more thing I want to say before I get this.
Yeah, go for it. It's a podcast, my friend. Keep going. Yeah,
exactly. Benzema.
Yeah, Karim Benzema. What's going on? What do you think? What have you made of him so far?
Well, it's not it, is it?
It's not what we expected.
It is just
fully his fault.
It's not his fault, and it's that thing of star. You know, when you congregate so many stars together in this one area,
somebody's got to lose out.
Yeah, someone has to. Exactly. It's the, you know, you can't run an everybody eats Euros offense that you've not built for you know, years beforehand.
Yeah.
I do wonder if there is an argument to bring that actually, you know, lessening your efficacy at striker by bringing in Olivier Giroud just makes you a little bit more rounded. It just means there's someone there who knows that they're not really there to score. They're there to facilitate. And actually, by the way, they score loads anyway, if you're Olivier Giroud. But I mean, you know, not yet. I'm not yet at the stage where I'm saying you need to drop one of the best centre forwards in the world for Chelsea's second choice, maybe third choice striker. I'm not quite there, but like I'm moving towards there. I've looked at properties there. I'm intrigued by the market there. And
you're bookmarking it?
Oh yeah. Apparently the people there look lovely. They're very handsome people there. And apparently there's a go-kart track.
Oh, well, that says everything.
But I think that France will win this 1-0. I don't think it will be, as you say, based on those past stats, based on these teams, they're both teams that are like very defensive for the talents they have there. So yeah, France to grind out the 1-0 and top the group.
Okay, well, so let's say that happens. And then Germany, you would imagine that they're going to build off of what happened in the previous game and see off a hungry team, which is probably an anomaly of what happened before, you know, getting that point against France. What do you think?
I think Germany will find it really hard. They still lack that sort of central creative punch, but you could feel it developing almost minute by minute. Kind of, I suspect if you went to watch early, you know, the early knockings of that France game and looked at specifically Havertz, Gnabry, Muller, and then go and compare it with what we got, you know, in the second half against Portugal, it would look like a different team. I think those three are starting to click. Havertz is, I'd still like one of them to kind of take more responsibility as a 10. I still feel like when it's Gnabry through the middle and Havertz left, that doesn't work, but you could see them moving towards more of a like fluid system where Havertz was doing what he does for Chelsea.
Yeah.
Again, I don't want to get carried away though with Germany, because in the end, what they did was just score the same goal four times against Portugal. It's just like, oh, look, no one's marking Robin Gerson's.
Which was very smart from Jogi Löw, I thought, you know, to use him the Atalanta way as opposed to, you know, any other way. Yeah.
It's kind of curious that basically they've pretty much built a whole system that you would kind of argue only really suits Gerson's and maybe the three centre-backs. I mean, you still think, God, put Kimmich in that central midfield role.
It's so weird to see him in that. Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah.
But it worked. It worked against Portugal, and we just have to see what happens against Hungary. By the way, okay, so let's just give everybody a recap of Group F for a second. France lead the group with 4 points, Germany 3, Portugal 3, and then Hungary with 1. If you said Portugal were going to lose this 1-0, right? So that gives France 7 points. Portugal and Germany would still, even if, well, no, you would imagine a Germany win, right? What do you say?
Yeah, I'd say 2-0.
Okay, so that puts Germany in second runner-up. Meaning Portugal be done.
They right? would go through.
Or would they go through because they have that win?
They go through because...
And nobody else has 4 points, right?
So they'd be on 3.
Yeah.
But their goal difference is superior to Ukraine. And so Ukraine are on -1. Finland are on -2 and are gone, I believe, after tonight's results. So
don't lose by... Four, a big amount, basically.
Three or four. They really, if they lose by 3, then Portugal are out.
Okay, so it shouldn't happen. And Portugal have never not made it out of the group stage. They've always come out of the group stage in the European Championship. So you would think that they would do it. But, you know, third place, Group F. But I guess they're Portugal. They don't care. They'll face anybody as long as they get through, right?
Well, it's quite... So third place, Group F. If it's third place Group F, I'm looking this at this is the Wikipedia page.
Is that Belgium?
Served me wrong. It would be either Belgium or the Netherlands, dependent on.
Okay, who else so that's tough.
Probably, I think it would be the Netherlands because it looks like Ukraine are going to be the ones to drop out. So yeah, the likeliest scenario I think is we get the third place teams from A, D, E, and F.
Yeah.
I know this is not exactly ideally suited to a podcast, but that means that the third place team from Group E would face Belgium. the third place group team from Group F, which we think is going to be Portugal, would face the Dutch.
Yeah.
Third place team from Group D, which we know will be the Czechs, will face the winners of Group E, which we're going to come on to, I guess. And then Switzerland would play the winners of Group F, which we think will be France.
Yeah. That would be quite fun. Yeah, well, that round of 16 is magical, I think. Has some good games all over the place. I like it. Well, let's go to Group E for a second. Sweden leading with 4 points, Slovakia 3, Spain with 2 points, 2 draws, Poland with 1 point. All right, Slovakia against Spain, Sweden against Poland in the final day, the third match day. What do you see here then?
Oh, it's giving me a headache already looking at this group.
I know, the worst.
It is very complex. And there are a lot of sort of competing interests here. One thing I find fascinating is, do Slovakia attack at all? Because a point, absolutely, 100%, they are through with a point, wherever they end up finishing. And we have got quite a lot of evidence based on the past two games that you probably can just defend against Spain and you may well get a point. And a point leaves Spain leaves Spain dependent on a favor from Sweden to take them through. So I think I'm going to have eyes on that Slovakia-Spain game. Slovakia are hard to score against. I know that Poland did so, and Sweden as well, but, you know, none of them were easy goals. Dubravka and Skriniar at the back are two top quality defensive options. So,
and I look at the stats to prove your point. Like, Slovakia were actually, you know, they had more possession. They were almost equal on shots against Sweden. You know, they're not just going to shy away in this one. It's not going to be that easy for Spain.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to kind of tell. I did this with the power rankings where I was sort of, I wrote about Denmark and it was all like, you have to respect the underlying numbers. They've had 42 shots, and joy of joy, for once in my career, I was proven correct. I'm not intending to get used to that. But then with Spain, you see those same underlying numbers, but you just go, no, I'm not having it. I don't believe in Alvaro Morata. And that feels really unreasonable, but I just don't trust him in front of goal. I like Gerard Moreno, but not for this Spain team, because he's someone that likes playing on the shoulder of the last man. And if Spain see that sort of opportunity, they'll just pass the ball sideways.
Yeah, listen, Spain, man. I mean, I've talked about it a lot. I agree with you 100%. They're not the difference. The reason why you can back Denmark more than Spain is because Denmark go for it. And they actually have way more versatility up front. I went on and on about it on Twitter, and I don't care. I'll say it again. The fact that Luis Enrique didn't pick Iago Aspas is beyond me. Because, you know, the numbers speak for themselves. He was tremendous last season. And not only that, he is not a Morata type of number nine. And he's not a Moreno type of number nine. He's actually super creative as well. A lot of assists last season in La Liga. And at the same time, he would have been so much up. Now, it's not just on Iago Aspas, but to your point about not trusting Morata and Moreno specifically for this system, I mean, it just shows. They don't want to enter the box.
Yeah.
It's so weird. I don't know what to say about Spain. They're just so weird.
Well, he's got nothing else to try. I'm just looking at the squad here and the numbers. So you've got Morata, and then you've got Moreno, and that is it. You know, there is no other centre forward. It then just becomes, you know, what minutes can we steal out of Ferran Torres or Yathabal?
Which is so stubborn. It's such a stubborn thing to do, I feel. Like, you know, it's just weird. It's just weird. I just don't get it.
We've not seen Adama for a minute.
Yeah, exactly. Because at least he gives you something totally different. Direct, on the wing, etc. He'll give you crosses, which, you know, Morata or Moreno could go to the end. But just listen, I know people, you're going to really hate me. Listen, Iago Aspas, 103 goals since 2015. The most by a Spanish striker in the Liga. Second only to Moreno in the last two seasons. Last season, career high 13 assists, most by anybody. The only Spanish forward last season with double digits in goals and assists. It's unbelievable to me that this man is not here, because he gives you something totally different to Moreno and Morata.
Especially if you are quite literally making the decision, no, we will take no one instead of taking this guy, you know.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, having said all that, what do you make of this game? What's your prediction, Slovakia, Spain?
I think it's going to be a 0-0.
Oh, boy. Well, that's not good for Spain because they have to rely on the other game, right?
Yeah. And the other game I have not a clue about.
Well, Robert Lewandowski probably thinking to himself, I can score here and I can score multiple times. What do you think? I mean, Sweden is a good team, but I don't know. Like, you give Lewandowski an inch, he'll take a mile. I know it's not just about Lewandowski, but, you know, let's see. Sweden have won 9 of their last 11 games against Poland, including each of the last 5. In fact, the last Polish victory dates back to a friendly back in 1991. So history favors Sweden. Do you favor Sweden?
So one of the interesting things throughout this tournament is the stats for Poland in terms of actually getting the ball to Lewandowski, especially in that first game.
Yeah.
Quite underwhelming. He's only kind of getting about a third of the passes, I think, or two thirds of the passes. That
he needed a tremendous header to make a goal. Like, he made that out of nothing because that wasn't an easy header. Right?
Yeah. And, you know, it feels like lazy kind of reporting, lazy punditry, whatever you want to call it, to just say, oh, but they don't have much beyond Lewandowski, because they do.
I said that last time.
But it's not wrong, because whatever they do have, it's not
enough.
It's not being used. It's all being used in service to let's get the ball to Lewandowski, which is a high risk strategy, because if he has an off day in front of goal, or if you just can't get the passes right, or if Sweden defend well, then it won't pay off. I mean, and in the end, he only needs one opportunity. So you kind of have to kind of bake in.
Exactly.
Poland will score one goal.
It's the same with Ronaldo in Portugal. It's like you said, like, he doesn't show up in a game, like, but all he needs is that 1 second. And that's Lewandowski. All he needs is that one time. But if you're a betting man right now, or a betting person, and you're trying to put some money on this, I know Jimmy isn't here, but listen, just so you know, Poland is actually going on a 5-match winless streak. It's their longest since 2018. That was 6 games. So even before Euro 2020, they're not winning. They're not winning at all. Like, you know, the other thing, by the way, is to know about this game, James Bench, is that none of the previous 26 games between Sweden and Poland have ended goalless. So there'll be goals.
Well, that doesn't make sense to what I feel about this game, which is that...
Another 0-0? You had it? Or what?
No, it doesn't feel like, maybe this is me being a lazy Western European. It does not feel like an exciting fixture, does it? I'm not like...
But it can be 1-0. It can be 1-0, a boring 1-0, right?
I mean, I've got it as 1-0. I quite...
1-0? Like, you have it as 1-0?
Yeah, I quite like them there. I mean, Isak looks the real deal. Is okay. They're so old that I feel like they've just seen every tournament scenario and know exactly how to deal with it. And they know absolutely how to get to the quarterfinals.
Well, if it is a 1-0, then it's as is. Sweden go through, Slovakia runner-up, and adios, España. You're done, right?
No, Spain would then also go through, wouldn't they, on goal difference?
Oh, that's right, because they get a point and they have the goal difference. That's right. Oh, that's so confusing. So, oh, well, then Spain... Oh, then this is exactly what's going to happen tomorrow then. We're going to see 2 draws.
But then it's all, you know, 1 Poland goal completely swings it.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm a bit torn between going for the Poland win. It had been a little bit underwhelming this tournament, but they need it. They need it a lot more than Sweden need it. So,
yeah. Because the key is Ukraine, right? They're 3 points, but they have -1 goal difference.
Yeah. So I'm changing my mind. I'm going to go 2-1 Poland. I just believe in Robert Lewandowski. I'm sticking to my previous 0-0 Slovakia Spain.
That gives them 4 points.
That gives Poland 4, Slovakia 4, Sweden 4, Spain 3, Spain out.
So Spain done. Slovakia gets that 3rd spot.
I think it's going to happen.
All right. Hey, listen, anything is possible, my friend. Anything. Well,
that's the one thing that's not supposed to be possible, isn't it? That a good, you know, a big team doesn't get out for Euros.
Well, listen, the proof is in the pudding. I haven't seen anything from Spain that makes me think you belong in the round of 16. That's really it. I mean, at least Denmark have shown us that they belong in the round of 16, right? Regardless of the emotional mountain that they had to climb. Spain, tactically haven't shown us anything. Like, it's been really pitiful, you know? Just
carnage. Give me the absolute, like, markers front page. If Spain go out with three draws.
Yeah.
One goal scored.
A lot of us saw this coming, though, especially when you just bring two people. And you don't bring Iago Aspas. What's wrong with you? Oh, my God. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. All right. Well, that's our show, everybody. Thank you so much, James Bench. Before you leave, any final thoughts on anything before you go? He's thinking.
You know, I actually watched a LinkedIn video. Never watch videos on LinkedIn. And it said to you, it said, like, these are the final thoughts you should have in a job interview.
Okay, what is it?
Well, the one I really liked was
final thoughts in a job interview if you're being interviewed.
Yeah, you know when people say, "And do you have any questions for me?"
Oh, okay, I got you. Yeah.
So one of the good ones I really liked was, you know, there's it's where will you be looking for me to improve when I join your company? I'd dropped that one on Igor and Addy and all our bosses. I mean, clearly I didn't need to, but I wish I'd dropped them on that just to.
I'm so gonna use that. Where is my desk gonna be? The third or the fourth floor? Exactly. I like it. Well, everybody, please try that in a job interview and tell us how it went. I would love to know it.
Do it.
All right. James Bench on Twitter. Diego Lasso Pod on Twitter. And let me check it out. James Bench, always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you so much, brother.
Thank you.
Hey, everybody, I want to thank James Bench for joining me today. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Que Golazo Pod. Also, listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher. We're on YouTube. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/Que Golazo. We're on CBS Sports, your CBS Sports app as well. Stay with us. So much more. Aside from Euro 2020, the United States Women's National Team roster for the Olympics is coming out very soon. We're going to have a great episode with our own Lisa Roman, as well as some guests talking about the roster of Vlatko Andonovski. So much more to come. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. Have a great, great rest of your day.
I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk. No. You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter and he said, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.